Episode 12 of the Torque Factor Podcast is here, and I'm your host, Scott Brown. This is a place where we discuss all things moving the automotive service industry forward, focusing on expanding knowledge and awareness around tools, equipment, education, and industry trends. This episode's featured guest is Bob Pattingale, who's the Technical Systems Manager at Opus IVS. Bob has been involved with training for most of his professional career and has purposely charged himself with staying on top of the latest technology. He recently joined the Opus IVS team after a lengthy run with Bosch serving in their technical training department. In his current role, he is tasked with managing ADAS support for their customers. Bob and I have been colleagues for well over a decade, and he recently dropped by my shop in Southern California, where we sat down for a discussion on advanced driver assistance system service. VehicleServicePros.com is a trusted online resource for vehicle service and repair information, fleet maintenance management, and the latest products for servicing America's fleet of vehicles. It's the official website of Professional Tool and Equipment News, Fleet Maintenance, and Professional Distributor Magazines. VehicleServicePros.com is on the pulse of the industry, sharing new technology, the latest product information, and market trends to keep our readers in the know-how. All right, that brings us to our recall segment. There are a significant number of in-tank electric fuel pumps in the marketplace with potential problems. One of these recalls was first surfaced in Episode 2 last year with Toyota Lexus under recall 20-Victor-012, potentially involving just under 700,000 vehicles. In June of 2020, Denso International issued an equipment recall potentially involving 2.1 million vehicles or parts under 20-Echo-026. In November 2020, two extension recalls were issued for both of these previously mentioned recalls, and they're all related to the Denso fuel pumps. According to the numbers, there are potentially 4.3 million fuel pumps with a defect. Recall numbers 20-Victor-682 and 20-Echo-085. Check the NHTSA website for any open recalls on your customers' vehicles passing through your service center. Okay, we have a case study from Diagnostic Network. Justin Miller with JM Diagnostics out of Harriman, Utah, and one I consider to be a very sharp technician. He posted about an old Dodge with a stubborn P0031. Now, this vehicle is a 2001 Dodge Ram 1500 with a 5.2-liter VinCode Y engine. Now, a P0031 is a heater control circuit DTC, and this vehicle has had multiple repair attempts, including trips to the dealer, and no one's been able to find a solution. Parts replaced included multiple O2 sensors and an ECM. Now, Justin proceeded to assemble a test plan, including monitoring two channels on his scope, one monitoring the heater current and the other monitoring the control side of the heater circuit. Additionally, he planned to use a scan tool to monitor the O2 pins. First, he connected the scan tool, and his first observation was that the wrong VIN was being returned. He then decided to jump out and go into the generic OBD mode 9 and check the Cal ID. A cross-check of the Cal ID with the calibration update PDF from FCA revealed that the current calibration was actually for a 2001 5.9-liter engine. At that point, he decided to modify his original plan. Now, he was doubting whether the calibration would fix the issue, but knew that the current calibration in the ECM was incorrect. So he proceeded to flash the ECM with the right calibration and retest. He then proceeded to run all the test routines that would normally flag the fault and was pleased to find that the problem was ultimately solved. Please look to the show notes for a direct link to this lengthy post and check it out on Diagnostic Network. Now that brings us to our featured guest, Bob Pattingale with Opus IVS, where we talk about ADAS service. So let's have a listen.
All right, well, here we are, folks. We've got an old colleague friend. I won't call him old, just he's been a colleague for a long, long time. How about that? Bob Pattingale. Going way, way, way back, PWR days, and you were working with Bosch for many, many years, and now you're working with Opus IVS. So what can you tell me about what's going on there, Bob?
Yeah, that's kind of funny when you think about many, many, many years, right? I mean, you know, all the way back to the ASA or ASC shows, and yeah, turned double nickel this year. So don't feel that old, but sure been in the industry quite some time. But yeah, started with Opus, celebrate the 1 year anniversary in June. So been working with the ADIS program and also doing a lot of work with the collision shop. So it's been rewarding and interesting and challenging at times.
Cool. Yeah. You think about those ASC trade shows, the Southern show down here in Anaheim. You know, a lot of really cool stuff there. We thought that technology was really taking off back then, right? With port fuel injection and distributed ignition. And now look at what we're working on. So tell me more about the ADAS stuff. What's going on there?
Yeah. You know, that's something I started working on when I was at Bosch. We would go over to Germany and they would have train the trainer events. So the technology's been on, you know, European cars for years. And until you've been over to Europe and go on the Autobahn, you don't really get to appreciate the technology. And I'm sure, you know, you've been there. So you can get a rental car and hop on the Autobahn. And next thing you know, you're going 280 kilometers an hour or close to 180 miles an hour in a rental car. In the United States, you don't see that. So when you're traveling at 100 plus miles per hour, a lot of things happen quickly and decisions have to be made. So a lot of this radar technology, camera technology, enhanced braking systems, all that comes into play, particularly when you're traveling at the super high speeds. So you bring that over to that level and see what we do here, you know, with the cars in the U.S. But I started with Bosch there. And they had the some of the contracts together with the OE, so the Beisbarth integration at the time. So you had the targeting systems that Volkswagen, Audi, Porsche would use. But then it evolved into, you know, the next level of manufacturers. So the bottom line there was, you know, what's the technology is going to take to service those systems? And Bosch was putting a kit together to get that done. So exposure to that was pretty straightforward, but the amount of application that we had in the U.S. would seem to be less important than, you know, it appeared to be over in Europe.
Yeah. So what do you see happening today in the U.S. market as far as the ADAS technology having an impact on service events?
Well, just like anything on a car, it's going to require service when it needs it. And I think there's a misconception of what are the requirements, when do you need to do it? And typically in a car, if it's not been in a collision, if it hasn't had any major modifications to the vehicle, if there are no codes associated with a system, it's robust to keep track of itself. It knows if it's working or it's not. The other piece of it, the consumer driving the vehicle will be able to tell you if certain things are not operating as they expect. So from that perspective, it's pretty straightforward. Now, if a technician removes the front bumper and the grill to do a water pump and a timing belt, if you know you've disturbed the radar, then you got to think about what it takes to make sure it's correct. That's a piece of it. The third piece is collision, and that's the big wild card. So the car's been in a collision. How do you make sure that you get everything back to working as it did when the car was new? And so that becomes the bigger challenge, I think, in our industry, because in many cases, a car is repaired from a collision perspective, delivered to the customer, and then later on, that's when the consumer might uncover that some of those systems are not functioning as designed. Now it shows up at a mechanical shop, and if the mechanical shop's not inquisitive enough, they're not going to realize that the vehicle was in a collision, and now they might be chasing something that's not normal because the body panels are not in the proper position or that type of deal.
Yeah, okay. So you guys are gaining a lot of experience on doing actual calibrations. I know I've been down to the facility down here in Huntington Beach, where you've got a calibration station or center where some of the tech support guys work, and you're doing a ton with a local, a big body collision shop down there, Gustafson's. So you've got the guys down there. You have another site in Phoenix or in Scottsdale?
Yeah, we got one at Scottsdale. So we're working with a big collision center there, Penske.
Okay.
So all the Penske dealerships will bring all their collision vehicles to that location. Most of them are late model vehicles, but there's some that, you know, that are in the, you know, 5 to 7 year range. Mm-hmm. We're also putting together one in New York. So we'll have a complete ADIS calibration facility there. That's begun right now. Mm-hmm. We're also looking at putting one together in the Detroit area that will be something that we'll work together with SEMA on, because SEMA is also interested in really understanding what it takes to make sure that any modifications on the vehicle that are done also comply and that the systems still work.
Yeah, that's interesting, and we should go talk about that, because I was in on that that big presentation. They had a pretty much an all-day type event online, all virtual. You were part of that event. You gave a presentation. I was out here in the middle of the shop, and we had it just running the whole time. And I was watching that, and I was amazed on how much technology and testing is going into these folks that make like lift kits and stuff, and they're making sure that the system is still working, but they're also trying to run a compliance test, right? Is that a federal motor vehicle safety standard thing, or what are they complying with?
There's no law that stipulates it. They just want to do it right.
Okay.
So, you know, many people remember years ago we had electronic stability control being introduced. So tire size dimension made a difference. You know, we have analog brakes. A lot of these things have been out for quite some time. So with the ESP portion of it, right, it's looking at, you know, the movement of the vehicle, longitude, latitude, the roll rate. Well, if the vehicle's at a certain height and now it's 6 inches taller, things are going to change. So they embarked on a project to make sure that it passed those safety standards. So there are standards that are written. There are that are SAE standards. I don't know the numbers myself off the top of my head, but there are. So what the aftermarket modification companies are doing, they want to make sure they're doing it right. They don't want to do it in a way that would put anybody in jeopardy. So they're spending the money. They know that there are people out there who would like to have their vehicles modified, whether it's higher, lower, or whatever. They want to be able to do it and make it right. I mean, you know, we made a list of all the things that you could modify in a car. And the one thing, I'm sure you've probably heard this before, somebody put a bike rack on the back of their car. Mm. They put their bikes back there and they get ready to take off and they can't back up.
Yeah.
They can't back up because the camber sees an obstacle and says, I don't want to back up. I'm going to hit something. So how do you modify the vehicle to incorporate something that we would all want to have in our car if we want to? We want to take our back. You're not going to back your car up. Then put your bikes on and go for it. You got to find a solution for that. So that's kind of, you know, where they're looking to go.
Yeah, that's something you would think the OEM would have already, you know, thought of. I'm sure there's somebody in their development stable that likes to bike, right?
And sure.
Throw a bike rack on there.
Unintended consequences.
That's kind of crazy. Yeah. So, yeah, it is kind of interesting because you've got, you know, collision avoidance. So say that you've got electric power steering that the car could actually try to swerve out of the way. But now you raise that ride height. You've got that center of gravity or that roll center has actually moved up higher. So what happens? Now that moment is amplified, right? So if it still does that same degree of turn, that vehicle could easily have a mishap. So that's something that would have to be engineered into the car to kind of limit its steering ability. Are they working on anything like that with the OEMs, or are they just doing certification testing for when they make a modification and working with the stock calibrations?
You know, they start with a base vehicle and they know the modifications they would like to make to the vehicle. So, you know, it's going to be lifted 2, 4, 6 inches. You know that somebody wants a lower vehicle. So they've started with the lift companies first and then went through the process of what happens when you change the height of the vehicle. And then they take it for the road test to see what those modifications are and do baselines against both sides. So if you drive the vehicle standard, what does it perform like in a safety mechanism? And they take them out to the track. I mean, they take them around the track, whether it's, you know, lane keep or it's collision braking. And, you know, they put objects that come in front of the vehicle and they validate, does it stop the way it should? So that's what they're trying to validate, is to make sure that any modifications they make function. And there is a cooperation with the OE from the program that we did with SEMA. There were groups on there from the Toyota, the Nissan, you know, Fiat Chrysler brands for the Dodge Ram truck. So there is a cooperation because they know that this is going to happen. The question is, who wants to bear the cost? And I think the OE probably feels that, you know, we're not going to modify the vehicle. We didn't build it that way. So if you want to do it and make these modifications and find out whether it's safe or not, that's on you, not on us. And I think that's where SEMA does a great job of working together to build a program that all their members can benefit from. So it's not each company doing it individually. They're working cooperatively as an association to make it as cost-effective as possible.
Yeah, cool. So what recommendations would you make for technicians that are starting to see these things in their vehicles? What do they need to really pay attention to?
It's like anything that you do in the shop, you got to research it. So my recommendation, this is what, when we teach classes and some of the programs we put together, is you got to start with looking at, what do you work on? What's the likelihood? What's the type of system you're going to see? So if you look on a lot of Asian vehicles, the Hondas, the Toyotas, Nissans, all those, if you work on those, pick one car, your most common car you see. Go into service information. Look it up. If I had to calibrate a radar, what would it take? Read that information. And if you don't see it in the aftermarket system, Alldata Mitchell or Modalogic, whatever you have, if you don't have it, then go to the OE site. It only costs you 10, maybe 30 bucks for multi-day access. Download the OE service information. Then go out to your service bay. Do you have flat space? Do you have 10 meters in the front of the car unobstructed to where you don't have any objects around? Then even if you don't have to calibrate a car, follow the instructions. Drop some plumb bobs. Put some marks on the floor. Use a laser. And even if you don't have the appropriate triangle, you're not going to calibrate the vehicle, just put it in the proper spot. Mm-hmm. Practice it, because you don't know until you do it. And I would go back to my time with Bosch. We did some work together at the Train the Trainer, but until I read the instruction and calibrated cars, I didn't really know the challenges that were there. And a little bit of it is just paying attention to the information that you see. So homework assignment would be, you know, service information, look it up, follow the instructions. Any technician that I know that has the ability to follow a diagnostic flow chart or read service information is going to have no problem whatsoever calibrating a vehicle. Yeah. It's not that complicated. You just have to follow the instructions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so increase your awareness of what's going on around you. When you get vehicles that are coming into your shop, take a look around the car and look and see what equipment's on that car. And that is important to know, even for, say, the service advisors, right? So if we're going to do a timing belt on this car and the whole front end's got to come off of it, including the radar assembly,
yep,
the service information is probably going to dictate what you got to do to put that thing back together, and whether or not it needs an alignment, or whether you just have to put a level on it, you know, yep, after the vehicle's on a level ground or what have you. So service information is your friend.
Well, and common sense, right? Yeah. You know, if you've been working on cars for a long time, you get an idea of what you affect when you do other things.
Yeah.
So paying attention to that process. And also, as you've stated, you have experienced technicians in the shop. Pay attention to the younger technicians in the shop, just in case they're not paying attention to the systems that are affected. But I think every shop should spend some time, you know, just take one night, one day, whatever you do, everybody stops, and let's go through every car sitting here. Let's see if we can identify which ones have blind spot, mm-hmm, which ones have a camera, which ones have backup parking systems, which ones have cameras in the mirrors, mm-hmm, which ones have radars up front. Radars up front can be challenging because a lot of times the radar is hidden. But do you know the difference between a Toyota emblem that has radar and a Toyota emblem that doesn't have, mm-hmm, radar?
Yeah.
Right? So just take some time. It's only take you less than probably 20 or 30 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
But everybody walks through the shop and understands the technology that's there, and have an open conversation with your technicians. In the event that you disturb any of these items, we need to know about it.
Mm-hmm. Great. So, Bob, where can people learn more about the services and offerings from Opus IVS?
It's opusivs.com. We've been working on building a learning management system. So in the next 30 days, we'll see that being launched, and we'll have content on there. The video that we just finished is ADIS Best Recommended Practices. We did a program with Babcock. So if somebody's looking for some information right away, you know, go to Babcock's and look up the video there. We've done some stuff with Collision Hub. We did the program with SEMA. The SEMA was, you know, consolidated. We'll be doing some work with CIC coming up, but absolutely. And if anybody, you know, certainly is interested, they can always reach out to me, you know, directly to find out what, you know, what do I need? What should I do? And we can give them some quick tips on how to get to the next step.
Okay, and you mentioned the LMS, and I forgot to ask you. I hear you guys are working on some sort of ADAS certification program, so tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah, what we're working on is a credential. You know, we're not going to call it certification. We're going to call it more of a credential, because we have the ability as Opus to help repair shops with OE calibration, reprogramming if needed, OE scanning. So we have the ability to remote in and use a factory scan tool to help technicians that don't want to own every factory scan tool. So a side benefit of that would be things that you need to do to the car that require extra effort. Now, typically, you know, like an old Ford, if you put a blind spot module in, you just simply code that module and then take it for a drive and it calibrates itself. But if you have to have targets or items that you have to place in certain positions, we're going to have a trust factor between us and the shop performing that calibration. Mm-hmm. So the credential that we're working on will include online learning and a mandatory hands-on class. And we'll have several locations that will offer that. And it'll be multi-days. And when you show up there, you're expected to roll up your sleeves, get ready with some masking tape and some plumb bobs. You're going to calibrate cars. And so for 2.5, 3 days, you're going to calibrate cars, demonstrate to the instructors that you know how to interpret service instructions. And when you're done, you'll have a credential from us that says that you've done everything that you need to do so that if your shop wants our assistance to calibrate a vehicle, you don't want to own the scan tool. You want to have that part of it. You'll buy the targets that we recommend from the OE, and then you'll calibrate the vehicle, and we'll be able to trust you that we know that you're going to place the targets, you're going to measure the vehicle out correctly. So that's really the principle that we're looking at, is to ensure that that there's a trust between the person placing the targets and measuring the vehicle and clicking the buttons on the scan tool, which, you know, one of our guys take care of.
Okay, that's cool. That's an interesting concept, and looks like a viable solution for shops out there, especially, you know, the next 5 years are going to be pretty interesting and beyond that, right?
So. Well, it's ironic, you know, when you think back in time, you know, you start asking people, you know, when did you know about adaptive cruise control? So if you think about it, you know, when I started doing research, I've been building an ADIS database, mm-hmm. and I went back in time. You know, when did adaptive cruise control? It goes all the way back to 2006.
Wow.
So on a Lexus vehicle, there was a radar in the front. Mm-hmm. Now, you ask the average collision person or a repair center, when was the last time you did anything with a front radar?
Yeah.
Pretty much they'll all tell you no. Now, a lot of people don't use adaptive cruise control,
yeah.
right, because the early technology wasn't as robust as it is today. But a radar's been on the front of vehicles since 2006.
Yeah.
So you think about that, and there is a calibration procedure for that. That wasn't dynamic.
Right.
It was actually a calibration procedure. So, you know, that's the point we make too is, you know, again, the awareness, being aware that that technology could have existed and what you need to do to bring it back into place.
Yeah, very good. Well, great. Thank you, Bob, for stopping by. I really appreciate catching up and sharing some knowledge on the ADAS stuff and what you guys are doing over there at Opus. So thanks again for...
It's amazing. Right. Amazing where we've been and how we come and where we're going to be 10 years from now.
That brings us to the industry events roundup. P10 Motor Age, ABRN, and VehicleServicePros.com will be presenting the Vehicle Repair Virtual Training Summit starting Wednesday, January 20th, 2021, offering on-demand access to 40-plus training courses for 45 days at one low price. Visit VehicleServicePros.com/Virtual Training Summit to register today. The Vision High Tech Training and Expo has announced its 2021 event will transition from an in-person event to a virtual event. The 6-day training event will span across 2 weeks, consuming 3 days each week. The event will start on Tuesday, March 2nd, and will conclude on Thursday, March 11th. Visit visionkc.com for more information.
Hello, Newman.
And this bit of feedback came from Andrew Platt out of RPM Automotive in Houston, Texas, in regards to Episode 9, an interview with Mark Warren. Thanks for that, Scott. It really brought back some memories. I've been to dinner with Mark and a few other trainers like Glenn Young a few times, mostly in Vegas, and or at different trade shows or training classes, and he is the best. A very smart and very nice guy. Well, thank you, Andrew. We appreciate your feedback. And anyone else wants to write in, email us at podcast@vehicleservicepros.com. Now that brings us to the end of the show, and we hope we are able to bring you some quality content, and we thank you for joining us. And we're looking for your feedback. So if you have any questions, comments, or suggestions on future topics and or featured guests, please drop them in our mailbag.